Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about the American Health Care Act, or the AHCA. What is it and will it happen? My guests are Dr. Robin Armstrong. He's a physician and Texas Republican National Convention committeeman. Also, we have Sherilyn Harley Laban. She is with the Center for Policy Analysis, both of them supporters of the AHCA. Lines are open if you have a question or comment about the repeal and the replacement of Obamacare at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go back to the phone lines. Let's talk to Kim calling from Upper Marlboro. Kim, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. I wanted to say that America was like before Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, that hospitals were going bankrupt because people that didn't have insurance used that as a primary source of health care, and people were in bankruptcy because they couldn't afford to pay hospitals when they didn't have insurance. So ACA was a response to a huge problem in America, and I think that it was an excellent response to that problem. Many of the Democrats, as the Democrats were in power at the time, wanted single payer, but that wouldn't have been able to pass at the time because of the politics. I know that they know full well that nothing will work unless there is a mandate, because there won't be enough people in the insurance pool, which is what happened to Obamacare, that young people decided to pay the fine instead of paying the premiums because they were so high. But those premiums were becoming high before ACA was even enacted. Once the bill passed, before it came to law, they already had started to rise artificially. So anyway, that's what I have to say.
Thank you so much. And Cheryl, I need to ask you about something that our last guest, Kim, just said. You know, the Congressional Budget Office is suggesting that, yes, and if Obamacare were not to be replaced, that the cost for the elderly would go up some three times, but also suggesting that it would go up five times under the AHCA. Not to mention that the AHCA could very well be hardest on the elderly. And there is certainly no guarantee that young people will like this more than they did or did not like Obamacare.
So what would you like me to respond to?
The whole thing.
I mean,
either way, I mean, I think the reality is that, you know, the seniors are a huge voting block. And if this new legislation, as it stands right now, hurts seniors, you know, even more, then, you know, politically, it could spell trouble, not just now, but certainly in the future for the Trump administration.
Okay, so part of what I think the House, and this is not, I think calling it Trump care, let me just give a little context, is wrong, because the White House didn't write this bill. The bill that we're all discussing right now originated in the House.
Okay, now the Speaker of the House, Ryan, didn't say that today. He said that he worked with the White House today.
Yes.
So I'm talking
about where it originated, sir.
Okay.
It is a House of Representatives bill. So, I mean, calling it Trump care it originates in the House. So, first of all, in terms of seniors, many of the seniors, during the campaign, many of the seniors were also part of the constituency that were complaining about Obamacare. And the reason why Republicans, I think this was in a previous segment you talked about, you know, what is this? What is Obamacare? You know, we don't have there are not enough votes. I mean, this is part of the process, because the reason why the House said we're going to repeal and replace is because for the past 6-7 years, they were dealing with their constituency. And at their town halls where people said, my business has failed, I'm not getting the care I need, my premiums have gone up. So people are asking for a repeal and a replacement. This is what the House members are responding to. This is what the Senate members are responding to. And this is what President Trump, then candidate Trump, ran on, is this repeal and replace. So clearly there's a whole segment of the population that are not happy about Obamacare and that this is not working for them. And to the previous caller's comment about patients having to go to emergency rooms, they're still going to them. Because, again, if you could not find an insurer on the exchange and you didn't qualify for Medicaid, then you're still going to the ERs. So there's still people who are left out in this process, and that the bill currently as it stands is simply still not working for them, and people still don't have access to quality health care options.
Do you think the AHCA would change that practice of going to emergency rooms?
I think that by offering people more choices, right, and eliminating these mandates, it will give people an opportunity to have more options with lower costs. And that's the problem.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Amy calling from Gainesville, Virginia. Thanks for calling, Amy. What's on your mind?
Hi, yes. I'm listening to all of this, and I have to say, we had insurance before Obamacare years ago and from our job, and we were paying $900 a month for a family of four out of the paycheck. Then Obamacare came on, and our premium actually came down out of our paycheck because Obamacare came on. I also have friends who lost their job or were laid off and could not afford that insurance that they give you. I forget what the name of it is. They could not afford that. We went to Obamacare, and for a family of four was given a price of about $400 or $500 a month as their premium rate, who decided that they didn't want to pay that because it was all out of pocket. So you have what I hear you guys saying is one thing. But if it was given from your job and you lost your job, no one can afford those rates because those are very, very high. So Obamacare became a median. So you have 12 million people who actually came on and are still signing up, not just because there is no other option, but the options, other options that were ever provided was so completely ridiculously overpriced that this little high option does make a lot more sense. The other thing I have a problem with is the entitlements that are placed into this bill that no one wants to talk about. Well, if you come on this show, we're intelligent enough for you to be able to give us the details of what exactly are they changing, how it's going to affect us, and you can bullet point it. But I don't accept the notion that it is too complicated for a mere mortal of us to understand. If you're going to come on, I need you for you to have some specifics, not just little tiny details, because you're not going to sell me on that.
So, Dr. Armstrong, help her out. Let's drop the talking points and talk about, you know, for example, you know, the entitlements. There are a lot of questions about the impact that this will have on Medicaid, which is what we were talking about before.
Right, and so specifically, you know, what the bill does is it does away with the employer mandate. It repeals the insurance mandate. What it also does is it eliminates a lot of the taxes.
But she was talking about entitlements specifically. Those aren't entitlements.
Oh, she said she needed specifics from the bill. That's where I was kind of going through.
Mm-hmm. I need specifics of what changes are actually taking place. Because right now, you're giving me a roundabout, and you're not being specific, and then you're saying we won't understand it because, you know, it's so complicated. Well, you're not doing a very good job of explaining it if it's so complicated and you're on the show. I want you to give me the explanation, please.
Well, yeah, so the explanation is, as I was saying, it eliminates those taxes, and it also it does away with the mandates. Now, the entitlements in particular, what it does with Medicaid is it actually blocks grants Medicaid back to the states. And so the states will have a lot more control over Medicaid, and the states are closer to the people. You can unelect those state representatives and state senators and governors if they don't do the right thing with Medicaid. But the federal government, it'll be taken out of the federal government's hands, which is the way it should be. And that's why you're seeing some of the deficit reductions. So what will happen is it will block grant Medicaid back to the states. So those state governments, so your governor and your state legislature in Virginia or Maryland or the surrounding area can actually take care and they can fashion it in the way that they think is more appropriate for their state government.
But Dr. Armstrong, hold on for a minute. Hold on, because let's talk about that, because this isn't getting into the weeds. This is getting into the details. All states are not created equal when it comes to geography, when it comes to population,
correct,
when it comes to demographics.
Correct.
And are these is Colorado going to get a larger or smaller amount than the state of Maryland? A lot of lawmakers, at least particularly in this part of the world, here in the Mid-Atlantic, are saying that those block grants are not going to be nearly enough money to cover the Medicaid expenses.
And so what the plan will be is going forward, we believe that people will have greater access to more effective insurance as well. The plan is to allow for insurance companies to compete across state lines. These insurance companies are multi-billion dollar companies, and they're having to deal with individual state insurance commissioners and such. If you allow these companies to compete across state lines, then you will have them competing with one another, and that's going to, in effect, create a marketplace that will lower the price of insurance. So many people who are covered today by poor, ineffective insurance that was provided by the Affordable Care Act will now have an opportunity to purchase less expensive insurance that actually will have a lower deductible and a lower premium. And so, and that's what we're trying to do.
But the other criticism of that is if you're in New York and you buy from a company that's in Texas, you've got to find that Texas or Alabama or Ohio company, insurance company, that is accepted in New York. And see, here's the problem with this, thank goodness that I'm not a congressman or a senator, like I said, you don't even have, the full partisan support of this when you have, Republicans in your own party, Dr. Armstrong, that say that these kinds of things are not going to work. And I know you say this is just, phase one, chapter one, what have you. I've heard the talking point as well. But again, it just seems to me that there's going to be a great deal of difficulty in getting this through the House, much less, the Senate. But I need to move on. I want to thank Kim for her intelligent, I'm sorry, is it, who was it? It was Amy. Amy, for her intelligent questioning and participation in this conversation. I need to move on, however. Let's go to Ricky, calling from Richmond. Ricky, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
First of all, I'd like to address the fact that a lot of people against Obamacare always talk about how their rates went up. One of the main reasons the rates went up is because enough younger people didn't sign up for the insurance. As we all know, younger people think they're invincible, and they didn't sign up. There should have been a healthy balance between elderly people and young people that would have offset the cost and would have made the rates cheaper. Second of all, one of the reasons why the rates went up is because a lot of the states that had a lot of rural people in the areas did not have enough people to offset the higher populated cities in other states. Rates have always gone up. Rates went up on insurance before Obamacare existed. That's just part of life and economics. That's pure economics. But one of the good things about the mandates was to encourage more people to sign up for insurance, which would have made the rates cheaper also. But we also talked about the elderly. Now,
yes,
is it okay for elderly people to pay five times more than younger people would have to pay? Is that all right? No, not in my book. Not all right. And we talk about the access. Everybody keeps saying access to it. I have access to a Maserati, but I can't afford it. And that's the point I want to make about keep saying access. More people might have access, but can more people afford it? And those I can talk about it more, but those are the main points I wanted to drive.
Well, Ricky, I got to take a break, and I appreciate those Democratic talking points as well. We got to get rid of these talking points and just keep it flat-footed and plain-spoken, which we're going to continue to do on the other side of this conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the American Health Care Act, repeal and replace of Obamacare. How do you feel about it? What do you think should be done? We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about the American Health Care Act, AHCA. Boy, I tell you, this alphabet soup. Gosh, can I just get an aspirin? What is it and will it happen? Of course, we want to thank, first of all, Cheryl Harley-Lebon for spending some time with us and sharing with us some of the political complications of this. So, Cheryl, I want to thank you. Cheryl Lynn, I want to thank you so much for participating because I know we've got to let you go. But I'm sure we'll be talking again. Of course, we are continuing with Dr. Robin Armstrong, physician in Texas, Republican National Convention committee man. Let me go to the phone lines. Let us go to Denise. There we go. Denise.
Hello, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. Denise, what's on your mind?
Okay, so I also wanted to talk about the Affordable Care Act versus the Trump-Ryan plan. So I actually am a business owner, and I also know other business owners. And so one of the persons that I know, he had insurance for years, paid for it, not on the plan. And then he had a catastrophic illness. His plan dropped him. He was so much against the Obamacare, but when he himself had to go on it, he now says that it was Obamacare that saved his life because it afforded him services that he couldn't get. So I understand there may be people who premiums may have gone up, but I'm not hearing enough about the people like my friend who is saying Obamacare saved his life. So I wonder if the doctor has also talked to some of those people.
Dr. Armstrong?
Well, I mean, I have heard overwhelmingly people who have said just the opposite, who have had lots of problems with Obamacare. And people are paying a whole lot more for premiums, and they're also paying a lot for deductibles, and that's just not the way the system is set up to work. And then to have that mandated, I think has been an extraordinary problem for many, many people. And so I am happy that your friend was able to access health care and then have a positive outcome. I mean, I'm excited about that just about more than anybody, but I also want to say that is not, that's the exception, not the rule. I believe that most people have had have been very unsatisfied with the access that they have had with the Affordable Care Act, and I think they've had problems with it. So congratulations. I think that's great for your friend, but I think that's not
the company that I own. We with the increasing premiums that we were forced to go to, we gave our employees the option of going out and getting their own insurance or paying the copay that with us. And they preferred, believe it or not, to go out and get their own insurance. So could it be that both sides, those people who are paying higher premiums and those people that are saying that Obamacare saved their life, could those be the fringes on both sides? And maybe in the middle is those people that are satisfied?
Well, that's not what the polls have shown. I mean, and that's not what the last few elections have shown either. I mean, I think that it's shown that most are dissatisfied with Obamacare. And like I say, I as a physician who takes care of patients, I would have loved to have seen of the Affordable Care Act be successful because I mean I'm in the business of taking care of people. I take care of patients every day. I did today, and so I would have loved to have seen it be successful. I just haven't seen it be successful for most people.
Okay.
And what the American Health Care Act is about is trying to give people greater access. It's trying to give people less of more affordable insurance, and is trying to give people more affordable premiums as well, just to have better health care. Because the Affordable Care Act, from what I've seen, it's people have insurance on paper only, but they really do not, they really don't have good coverage, and so they're not receiving the care. Your friend notwithstanding, they're not receiving the care. But we're just checking the box, insured. I could make an argument that a lot of those folks who got insurance under expanded Medicaid actually still do not have insurance because they're not receiving the care. I could make an argument that a lot of people who went on to the exchanges really don't have insurance because their deductibles are so high. So they're still not covered effectively. And the goal for the AHCA is to provide effective coverage for people.
Denise, thank you so much for your phone call. To that point, because, and this is the thing that I was talking about, Dr. Armstrong, as it relates to geography. And I think that a lot of these discussions, and one could argue just like the election, these discussions are being had in big cities and in well-populated suburbs, but that you've got, you know, people in the Midwest and people in rural communities that are losing out. Well, I'll tell you, you know, having, you know, covered news in rural communities for years, that in parts of southern Tennessee, south central Tennessee, and in parts of central Alabama, for example, it doesn't matter what kind of insurance you have. If there's no doctor for miles, then it becomes problematic. You could argue that Obamacare has exacerbated the situation, but for people that are in rural communities and you're in the Lone Star State, you can drive for miles without seeing anything. You know, what impact does this legislation promise for people who live where there isn't a lot of access for health care anyway?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what it does is like I say, it will provide more affordable health insurance for them. There are lots of programs now that, I mean, this particular bill does not address that as much, because there are all sorts of enticements to physicians to go out and practice in the rural communities. I have lots of friends who are getting their medical loans paid back, you know, by practicing out in rural communities, and so they get pretty good deals to go out there. And so to any physicians out there who are thinking about practicing in a rural area, you get a pretty good deal for it. And so that's some of the programs that exist today. This bill really does not address that, and so that's certainly something that we can address in phase two of the bills coming down the pike. So thank you for mentioning that, because that is a very important issue.
Because these are some of the people that supported Donald Trump's candidacy, and you know, you don't want to, those who support the AHCA and who believe in it, you know, or believe in what it may do. And I'm not talking about, you know, the partisan craziness. I'm just talking about, you know, getting your checkups and, sure, you know, and stuff like that. And look, you know, you're the spouse of a breast cancer survivor, and, you know, and God bless you and God bless your wife. But, you know, if you've got somebody, you know, that's living in a town, Powell, Alabama, which back when I was covering news back then had it was 800 people.
Right.
And, you know, but cancer doesn't know that.
Sure.
And so, you know, these are the kinds of things I think that last lady was talking about, where you said, yeah, it may not be, you know, commonplace for some folks to get their lives saved because of Obamacare. But isn't one life worth, you know, trying to make something better?
Well, absolutely. And that is the whole purpose of the bill, is to try to improve the healthcare system. I mean, that is all of our goal. I mean, you know, this is not no one is playing politics with this, and nor do I think. I mean, so the one caller mentioned earlier that Obamacare was a reaction to a lot of the problems in the healthcare system, and I have to applaud, you know, all those folks who took on that really, really tough issue of health care, because it is a very tough issue. So, and I applaud them, but I think that it just has not delivered on all the promises that it made. People were not able to keep their doctor. People had to change their insurance. People had to go off of their plan and get onto another plan that was lesser and which was less affordable and more expensive. And so I believe that our goal is to make sure that those folks are covered. Hopefully we can save more lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly will be pushing for that as a physician. I will be pushing those legislators to make sure they do the right thing. I mean, that's where we're all compassionate people and caring people, and we want to make sure that we do a lot. I do a lot of free health care, you know, because I care. I do a lot of care for people who don't have insurance because I care, and many of my colleagues do as well. And so I think that those issues have to be addressed as well, and as a society we should. And as our legislature, they should as well. It's their responsibility to do that also.
Well, real quick, final word. Thomas from D.C., you've got 30 seconds.
Yes, thank you. Real quick. Doctor, you said, and thank you for taking my call, but Doctor, you said that it's not a partisan issue. In actuality, this thing with President Obama and the Affordable Care Act, it started with partisanship. He had no assistance from the Republicans or anyone in Congress or the Senate to help him get this bill going and get it to a place where it could actually work for the American people. So now we have the opportunity, because you had the Republicans had 60 opportunities to repeal this bill. Now all of a sudden the president says no one knew it was this difficult. It was very difficult. I wanted to ask about the entitlements, because if in fact you're going to block grant this, then who determines the amount of money that the states get? And once the states get that money, what happens when their constituency, the health care of their constituencies?
I gotta go, Thomas. I appreciate it. That was a question that I asked, and I'm sure that they're asking that on Capitol Hill, even as this continues to move or not move through the House. Dr. Robin Armstrong, Sherilyn Harley LeBond, thank you both so much for participating in this conversation. I'm sure we will.